powerful from the very beginning. Wait a sec. I'm asking you, this is tape two of the interview.
The towel?
Yes.
I was opposed to it from the beginning and opposed it publicly on every other occasion and sometimes ridiculed it. And I didn't think they were as powerful as they pretended to be, and it turned out I was right.
They were very powerful, wouldn't you say, in the way the merger legislation went?
Merger legislation is a copy of Madison's practices. I mean, the document that winds it up. They got some things out of it. You go through that and you'll find it was copied almost word for word from the practices at Madison. We lost the battle on merger, but we won some of it back in the implementation legislation. I talk about the implementation. Mm-hmm.
The merger. Taub was a thorn in my side, and I started out not intending to have any thorns because that wasn't the way I. So I, when I first came, I had the required meetings. Ed Music was waiting to call upon me, and Marshall Wick and. So on and explained to me the history of TAUF and how they wanted to be cooperative. But it was it soon became clear that TAUF had only one agenda, and that was collective bargaining. And with TAUF as the collective bargaining agent, although later they, of course, joined the AFL-CIO, so they're now, if they ever got their union bill through, it would be an affiliate of a larger state organization.
The IFT.
I guess that's right, American Federation of Teachers. They, I would say, were more disruptive of efforts to make the system run smoothly than any individual organization or institution. Taken all by itself. There may be an exception to that, but no one else was as consistently troublesome. And it was because their agenda always seemed to them to be based on the setting up a row. That is, the system had to be doing something which was contrary to the traditions of WSU institutions. And therefore it was wrong. It was not a proper interpretation. So you'd even get agreement from the TAUF leaders that a particular policy statement you were putting on the agenda was, they may not have agreed with it totally, but that it was a reasonable compromise at the time. And then without notification, they would show up at the Regents meeting and testify against it in most aggressive terms, saying that it was a very bad document and they'd try to get it untracked. That was a sort of constant thing. So after about 1976, I quit meeting with TAUF representatives except when there was a state delegation, two or three of them in, and when I had staff with me, and when there was a memo to the files about the nature of the discussion afterwards. Those were very brief meetings. But it was nearly everything, you know, the seating at the Regents meeting, the question of whether or not the faculty senates in the WSU institutions represent their institution, the faculty of their institution, or TAUF represents all of them. You see, they didn't want the Senate's
really thinking of was how their pressure affected Madison. I am trying to keep this on how this all affected Madison, and their insistence that faculty salary should be the same. Alarming? And
well, it was, but you know. The faculty out there would have been arguing for it, even if they hadn't had TAUF. That was the faculty position. They one time, one of them said, "Well, why do you suppose we supported merger if it wasn't to get the same salaries?"
one of the faculty members.
One of the TELF people.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that was their position. And Lucy did give them some money the first round, you know, quite a lot of money. And
well, that was before merger, wasn't it?
We had it. It was part of the
70 budget, yeah. I think, or 71.
But it sometimes comes across in the literature that they mean salaries equal to the Green Bay and Parkside salaries.
That's what they were asking for, and I suppose that over the long pull they would have gotten them. They got the same percentage increases as everybody did. Mm. You see,
didn't they get higher?
1 year they did.
Yeah.
That was the budget before merger.
That was part of the price of merger. Mm-hmm. Out of the price.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But on the whole, as Don says, they were just an irritating nuisance. They appeared on everything, and fortunately they had this guy, Musak, as their head. I've been trying to get somebody to endow him so he can be permanent there. He's such a bore. You know, he really is. I didn't start out being antithetical to unions. I made my life out of teaching about unions.
But you draw the line.
Well, I draw the line at giving up something that's better than any union ever had. You know, the faculty runs this place, and I don't want the AFT or sending in some business agent to tell us what we got to do. Or the governor's man in employment relations. Think of having this guy Fuller that just got left the Earl administration making decisions about personnel policy for the university. It's as scary as hell.
Yeah.
I know about collective bargaining. The other thing about these TELF people, they don't know anything about collective bargaining. All they can do is see themselves in charge, dealing directly with the legislature for the university system. And it is terrible. I guess the people who are most opposed to it are Ozan, Barbash, Young, Stern, people who really understand what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I do think I'd have to subscribe to your view that at first I found, I used to fervently wish that Ed Music would be replaced. And then it began to occur to me increasingly that probably they would have had their collective bargaining bill each biennium after 1975 if it hadn't been for Music's political blundering. That he, in a sense, he became an unwitting ally in seeing to it that collective bargaining got defeated, because he was always overreaching and seeking to get more out of the legislature than and they were prepared to give. So as a result, you'd get a very divisive kind of bill, and that would sink passage. I don't know. It's a sort of a scary thing, though, and it remains that way.
Mm-hmm. And
I did want to say one thing in retrospect, John. I thought John was very good with the regents. One thing that he did do consistently, he spent a lot of time on the phone with regents and discussed matters with them a great deal before meetings. And in general, I thought he enjoyed rather amiable relations and was able to maintain a certain sense of unity in a board which by its very nature had been made up of the old WSU and UW boards and could have become a sort of an abomination if it had great fallings out. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
And
he was perhaps, as you suggest,
a call from a particular region might excite him more than have been warranted. Yeah,
true. You know, that's where people survive too.
But he also had one. There was one thing I recall. It was that he found this may be in line with Arlie Muck's statement that he found disheartening with Ed Young. See, Ed Young would be a very difficult man to do anything but grant a great deal of autonomy to, because he's not within his temperament to be easily malleable into an organization if he doesn't want to be on the frontiers where he doesn't want to be easily malleable. And I've sometimes said, Ed, that when you're opposed to something, you accomplish a great deal by process of making it extremely difficult for it to happen, and that seems you're doing nothing, but in effect it doesn't really happen if you have decided you don't want it to happen very often. Sometimes it does, maybe.
It isn't always that way, but once in a while it comes out that way.
But John complained. He said that when it particularly a difficult issue, that is, sort of controversially, Rao would break loose in the regions where he felt that he wasn't the best person maybe to know to be able to answer that, and that you might be, that every time he looked over at your chair, you'd found yourself out in the hall, that he could never find you, and therefore
he's very proud of a picture he has of me at a Regents meeting where I seem to be asleep, but I wouldn't be asleep. I'd be resting my eyes.
Anyway, your eyes would be in the condition where you couldn't catch them. He couldn't attract you.
You know, maybe this is a good time for what was our really major question, is what is
whether you think the system took any steps to protect the distinctive place of Madison in the system.
It was sort of one on the one hand and on the other hand. The political pressure on John was very heavy towards equalization. They had all those, they had merger, they had regents from the old system. On the other hand, he didn't want to hurt Madison, so he not much happened, really. Percy cooked up a formula on budgeting by cost and of instruction, which really was good for us. And he defended it as being fair. I think it was fair, but it certainly protected us in a way. There were times when you might think something was... I remember once we lent money to the system because the others were short, but that was the right thing to do. But we got our money back. And
what you did? Yeah. What was that about?
Well, it was shortfall in the budget.
The enrollment funding money?
Something like that. And I'm for that kind of thing. We were part of the same system, and it saved a lot of embarrassment and so move it around. They could have done it anyway, but I supported it rather than objecting. Mm. If my faculty had known I was doing it, they would have been upset. But we all came out right in the end. Mm-hmm. Things like that. So I guess I've thought about this question a good deal. I can't see any good that came of merger, and it used up a lot of energy. That bureaucracy over there, insatiable, it seemed to me, not so much now as it used to be. Maybe it is worse now, according to Dr. Irv. They get involved with, take affirmative action. We would have had it anyway in one form or another, but the amount of paperwork compared to the amount of good it does, if you tested it, I think the weight of the paper is greater than the people who were benefited, the weight of the people.
Mm.
And this is partly in response to federal rules, partly in response to the regents. Now, at your worst moments, you blame it on the system for pushing that along on you, but then you stop and realize you would have had it in some form or other anyway. And it's things like, so it's very hard to say. In a sense, merger protected us from being out there all by ourselves. Suppose they'd merged everybody but us and we stood alone and had to fight and compete with them in the legislature. I don't know how we would have come out, you see. In some place, Michigan does very well against the rest of the state, so to speak, mm-hmm. but whether we could have or not. the greatest threat, I think, hanging over us is one of the things that bothered me is we no longer have any regents. The role of regents and trustees is to help a university. Now they know what the system tells them, and the system has to look out for everybody, and so we don't have that kind of personal interest that we used to have. Sometimes interference.
UW-Madison, you mean?
Yeah. Mm. Sometimes it was interference, too. So it wasn't all positive, but I think that's a real loss, not having our own public representatives of people of stature, such as the regents.
You just have to hope that two or three of them will support
yeah,
Madison?
Yeah, but you see, as I suggested earlier, if there'd been a real row between Madison and the system about some fundamental issue in the second or third year after merger, we had enough regents up there who were identified themselves with Madison. And in fact, Walter Rank used to turn to me in the meeting and say, Ed, what do we do on our campus? you see, but that's gone now. And if it came, Irv doesn't have this protection that I had and the campus had. Now, Irv's very, he hasn't lost any serious things, but it isn't the same. I know some of the politicking. Because he doesn't know them. He doesn't have the access the president has. Mm. See, and that is a real loss, I think. I think probably on balance it would be easier for the legislature to distinguish Madison from the rest of the state outside of merger than in merger. But that's only guesswork. It could go the other way, you see. They could gang up on us, so to speak. So that's one thing. But the thing that really bothered me a good deal is this collective bargaining thing hanging over us. Because our faculty now might fall at something, we get a bad time to say, well, you know, the system administration is doing us in. We can't get at them. We can talk to our chancellor. We have our university committee. We've got everything here. But those guys up there, there's nobody, no way to get at them. Maybe we have to join up with this union. Now, most of them haven't gone that way. Mm-hmm. But what I'm more afraid of is the TELF will get a collective bargaining bill. They'll get organized. They'll bargain with the Fullers of this world. You know who Fuller was, Department of Employment Secretary?
No.
Well, that's who. And who used to bargaining with the State Employees Union. I mean, he believes whoever has a job, I mean, that's their job. So the control of personnel is the biggest thing in the university that's all about. It all moves downtown under collective bargaining bills, all these bills. And if they bring that about, even if our people don't join up, you see, under merger, those guys will bargain for us. So we'll get what they put up. That's the fear I have of a merger. I think it's increased the amount of the overhead of the university, but not a great deal. You know, the number of people answering things, but bureaucracies grow everywhere. I don't know. As John said long ago, I pointed out that we had some of this before merger. Fred built quite a big staff system before merger, and of course, but things. How can I tell you? Take the affirmative action and federal regulations. This just created a great many jobs, and a great deal of reporting, because the belief of the proponents was that somehow we can nail them if we can get more facts. There was a whole adversarial relationship in all these people. That's been an irritant, but as I say, that would have been an irritant in some form or other anyway. And our campus would have rushed into it to do the right thing. I mean, we're taking the leadership, most our faculty, no matter how they behave, they really believe in affirmative action. And they may not get around to do much at a given time. But
they probably would do more if they were, at least I always contended that the faculty will do more if you make your appeal through conscience. That is, what it is that they want to accomplish for their university or how they conceive of the university, rather than through reporting and the threat of sanctions. Mm-hmm. I think that's been a but terrible blunder in the relationship between government and the universities on the business of affirmative action. And the Regents, that was a very difficult thing I found. The Regents' policies on affirmative action, had the policy had been made almost immediately after merger. In the shuffling of staff, we wound up with two people instead of one, and that was not the work of the system staff. That was a regional pressure group. I think now they have three instead of one. I guess we wound up with three, and now they have four. And this is probably a commitment that doesn't accomplish very much, except increase the flow of paper. I think on balance, Ed, most of the increased pressure of reporting came out of legislative pressure and out of the increased activism of the LFB, DOA, mm-hmm. and the Legislative Audit Bureau and all of those things. And the system was put over and over again into the position of not being able to defend anything mm-hmm. unless it had available to it the information which was being required of it for delivery downtown. That was the process. On the other hand, there were some areas where the reporting was a creation of the system and was I think excessive. I do think that some of the steps taken, some of them were taken before I got here, so I don't, I'll continue on that. One of them was the quick creation of the clusters, setting Madison and Milwaukee into a doctoral cluster and the university cluster, the other institution.
I take full credit for that.
Do you? Okay. Well,
I worked that out with Lucy privately.
All right.
When did you do that?
Well, after merger.
That had been done by the time I got here, and I thought it was a brilliant and fortuitous stroke because in the absence of that, the pressures on homogenization of roles and budgets would have been almost uncontrollable. Mm-hmm.
Why was Lucy willing to do that?
Lucy was a strange, you know, he was a very interesting person. He and I had a cordial relationship. He wasn't a pal of mine. I wasn't, he knew I wasn't very warm. In fact, I was privately quite critical of the merger business. But I always had access to him, and if I had something that sounded reasonable, or if he didn't care, he would give me my way.
Hmm.
Now, he didn't care about this one way or another, and I seemed to care a great deal about it, because I had to get
this
it written.
Cluster, you mean?
The idea of separating mm-hmm. in the budget. Mm-hmm. Now, it was mostly, at the beginning, it was fairly symbolic, but he did it, he went along with it. And something I pushed for. You see, I was trying to find ways of building fences against the pulling Madison down, against the leveling business. Now, I couldn't go alone for Madison. I had to, so I used the doctoral campuses.
Yeah.
That protected him politically, too, because he had to Milwaukee with it. I did that after taking away their wharf money, which cost him $700,000. He had to replace it.
Why did you, how did you think of the idea of
well, you know, if somebody said, what Sam Johnson said, nothing like hanging, concentrate your mind. My mind was concentrated on Madison.
What it did for me was one of the first jobs I had to do was write mission statements.
Yeah.
Because this was a part of the state law, the merger implementation that the Regents would create these mission statements for each institution. That made it possible that There's a little design of that mission book, which I think is the only really consequential planning document other than the documents on the notion of federation and the notion of relationships between the regents and the institutions, the way policies are to be handled. But it made it possible to create a separate cluster mission, distinguishing doctoral institutions from baccalaureate and master's level institutions. This automatically preempted any aspiration. It didn't preempt any aspiration, but it preempted any possibility of approval of a proposal for a doctoral program at any of the outstate universities. And then...
Was that, you had that in mind, did you?
I had as much in mind as I could get.
Well, you see, this is the thing, this is
but
the
it had to be backed by the mission statements,
yeah,
is
well,
that right?
Yeah, this was sanctified in the mission statements,
yeah.
And
mission
it's there.
Statement came afterwards.
Yeah.
He did that.
And then the second thing was, and this was a very subtle thing, which I think has been sort of overlooked recently. The only two institutions that had a research mission by name were Madison and Milwaukee. The others had a mission of the faculty to engage in scholarly activities. Now that's a very subtle distinction. A lot of them, the chancellors used to grumble. They said that's a change in wording without a change in meaning. And I always said, no, it isn't. It means that categorical support for research from state budgets will not be asked for your institutions. If you're going to do scholarly work, it has to come out of faculty time or out of your success in getting grants.
Mm-hmm.
And so that may be a distinction which has been lost sight of, as I say, because of some of the recent events, but nevertheless, it was an important planning document to discipline certain kinds of fiscal aspirations. Then the third thing was the distinguishing between Madison and Milwaukee, one as a comprehensive doctoral and professional
institution. Was that your idea too? No.
And the other as a limited and urban related.
Yeah.
And that there's probably a good deal of ambiguity in that distinction, but it was useful planning. Yeah.
One of the lucky things, I think, from Madison's point of view in this period was Werner Baum was the chancellor at Milwaukee. Werner, first-rate scholar himself, and he and I were good friends. Whenever the Regents meeting, he stayed at our house. When there was something in Milwaukee, we stayed at their house, and we talked about everything. And when we disagreed privately. And he was willing to stand up to his faculty when they were complaining about Madison getting something. And I was willing to stand up to people here if they thought Milwaukee was getting too much, because we had respect for each other. And Werner wanted this place. He didn't want to do anything to hurt Madison.
So he wasn't going to undercut it. That's
no,
yes, that
no,
was
he
important.
Was a forthright. In fact, he would stick his neck out for us sometimes more than he had to. So that was very, very worthwhile.
I guess I asked the question the wrong way. I said, what did the system do to help protect Madison? And really, what did you do then? I mean, what else? Do you remember other...
Well, I just kept at it. I kept repeating this federation thing. I kept talking about campus autonomy, that these chancellors had a right to do their thing. They never had any rights before merger to do anything, actually. But I worked with them, and I helped them get things. I was one of the boys.
What did you think about the Platteville Engineering College?
Oh, I didn't even think about it much. I thought that Bernie was going to retire sooner or later, and that somebody else would come along. As it turned out, somebody did, who shook the place up. We had some faculty who were quite excited about it, but see, my view is maybe is this, if somebody has access to the facts, elects to go to Platteville to study engineering, well, he deserves what he gets. As long as we don't divert resources from Madison to take care of the problem.
So you didn't mind their having it?
No. In fact, I argued one time, the system cooked up a very complicated division of the state for extension purposes. And then I discovered that Stout was offering an English class somewhere near in Dane County or something like that. So I called Bob Swanson. I said, Bob, I understand you've got somebody teaching English down here. Oh, he said, I should have told you all this kind of stuff. I said, no, that's not, you shouldn't have, but let me tell you, if we can be any help by providing office space or classroom space or use of library or anything of that kind to this venture of yours, go right ahead. See, my attitude was, if somebody, I knew my own faculty, some of them just wouldn't do it. And if people want to study English from people from the vocational school as against people from the university, then that's their business. And you know that if we can't compete then on the quality, we're no good. Why should we have a fence? Now, some of our faculty always want to build fences. I want to build a fence around the money and the resources, but I don't want to build a fence around the entitlement to do it or not to do it. I thought we're wasting an awful lot of time talking about such things. Because people, look what the way this extension thing is coming full circle, although right, it isn't very good now, it's an awful mess at the moment. And I think Irv is in bad form by saying we've got to get rid of the chancellor. Something ought to be done about it. But
it's going to take another turn of the wheel or two before it. I do want to say something in defense of those districts that we invented. Because we didn't have any trouble with Madison. But the turf warfare between, particularly between Whitewater and Parkside, and if Parkside had, Madison had been willing to undertake it between Whitewater and Madison, they would have liked to have rowed with you, but they couldn't quite figure out because of the way the lines were drawn and the missions were drawn. Between Green Bay and Oshkosh, and Stevens Point and Oshkosh, and Green Bay, initially, although that worked out very amiably along the line, between Eau Claire and Stevens Point on certain fronts, was absolutely mind-boggling.
Yeah.
And I was getting nothing but telephone calls saying that so-and-so is teaching a course in my backyard that we have... we're perfectly capable of offering, and we ought to be offering it. And then, so we drew the district lines, then we drew up a little protocol. See, I'm proud of that protocol, because it worked. What I said was that if any chancellor wants to call me and say that he, at that time it would all have been he, objects to a course being offered in what is loosely defined as the service area of his institutions, that's fine. But such a call is not welcome. What I expect that chancellor to do is call the chancellor in the other campus, and the two of them work it out together. If either of them calls me without calling the other one, that first instruction I'll get is call that other chancellor, and you decide whether or not this is a problem or not. Then I said, if you mutually agree that it's a problem and you can't reach agreement as to what should be done about it, why, the two of you get on the phone, call me. And I said, I'll settle it within 24 hours. Well, they didn't want that. And you see, they don't want somebody up in system, because there's nobody up there who really knew enough details to make those decisions. I wasn't going to give a long investigation. I was just going to point a finger and say, either stop it or continue it. And so I really never did get an appeal on one of those mm-hmm. issues. I did get a lot of people who tried to get me to take to intervene, but then when they found out the way it was going to work, why they would stop. Mm-hmm.
I recall declaring when that was being put together that Madison had a statewide jurisdiction.
That's right.
And nobody in the system argued with me.
Your service area was statewide.
Oh, is that? Oh. Mm-hmm.
I just took that
even,
position.
Even not having
I just announced it. but nobody, you know. Well, see, most of the things that we had a lot of things nobody else had anyway. We couldn't be anything else but statewide. Because, you know, and again, it was my knowledge that people really wanted to get good engineering. They would come here. And my knowledge that for certain things they'd get better instruction from the state universities. Now, I have every reason to believe that English teacher down was teaching communications to some business group was going to do a more thorough job. Our English department doesn't think they teach writing. They're literary giants,
mm-hmm.
or at least critics, not giants. Well, I mean, but that's you know we that's where they yeah. feel, and so. The whole thing wasn't terribly important. My problem was not out with the system. My problem was with my own faculty. Some people, you know, our geography department at one time was spent more time fighting for its jurisdiction than anything ever was. Not only mostly internally against Reed Bryson particularly,
mm-hmm.
but that's another story. Anyway, these are the kind of things. Is it the system? I think what people have to, you know, as I think about it over the years, actually, that you couldn't point to any great evil that came out of the system, or any great good, because you don't know what would have happened otherwise. So one has to be, you know, really kind of careful. You had to try to keep, not let it grow too much, because of bureaucracy, but they're natural. Because the legislature demands them all over the country. I spent the summer for last New England with this six universities. And every legislature there wants some, they don't like whatever they've got, but they want some kind of coordination, some kind of system, because they think that having it all go through one office, somebody they can get at, you know, but so we.
Well, I think in that connection, I don't. Really think in the, I'm not sure what the alternatives would have been, whether or not mm-hmm. Madison would have been better off or worse off, but it seems to me that systems with a single board of regents and a single budget are potentially great, are potentially a great threat to mm. universities, and I, and particularly to Madison. I don't know how that. I do think there are things that could be done legislatively or constitutionally, or perhaps by very, very explicit custom supported with understanding by the regents. But I don't see any of those things as likely to happen in Wisconsin in the near future. The problem is that you do have a single center of power, namely the regents, and you have a single budget, and that invites, in the right circumstances, either the maximization of centralization by the system, or by the legislature, or by both, or in collaboration with one another. Simply the diminution of the role of campuses and the role of the faculties or whatever you want to have. That's a threat. I don't think.
Oh, it's all here. It certainly is.
I don't think systems inherently have to be a threat, but I think you cannot predict who's going to be in charge or what the legislature's.
But when you have a DOA with 1,200 people downtown looking for things to do, when you have a legislative bureau which can't find anybody stealing money. So they try to become management experts where, you know, there's no they don't know a damn thing about management, but who can prove they're wrong? And they make mm-hmm. these charges. So you've got all this apparatus going. But it's going everywhere. This is why I wasn't unhappy when we got a Republican governor.
Now,
mm-hmm.
in spite of what he was quoted as having said this morning.
What did he say this morning?
That the system had better not try to go out and win public support because it might backfire on them.
On this particular issue.
Or the one issue, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think he'd be more supportive of the university than Earl was. Earl was first one head and then back, you know, and stuff like that. Couldn't count where he was at. Earl was more interested in gay and women's and minority and all kinds of, temporarily, and he's been working very successfully at keeping our lake water from getting down south. I like Tony, but and he was great when we was short time he was Secretary of Administration, got along fine, but he hasn't been an unmitigated blessing for us.
See, Thompson also said that he'd already made it clear the university was going to be treated fairly in the budget, that they're going to get as much as they got last time in terms of percentage.
I don't know him well, but my concern is that the Democrats are centralizers in control. They want their activists. Republicans tend to be more laissez-faire, maybe a little more elitist. A university, everybody in the university isn't equal. There's no way they can, whatever legislation they pass won't do it. Well, that's my view.
Well, that's always been said before, that Republicans were better for the university, but one doesn't know how long that will go on.
Oh, no, but breaking it up is better than having the same crowd all the time.
Yeah.
You know, take this collective bargaining thing, Earl was eager to sign it. It's gotten through now. Thompson, I don't think, will be so eager to sign that bill. He fought it. He said, from my point of view, that's great.
Do you talk to him? Do you know him?
I know him slightly. I don't.
But you're not. You don't have his ear.
No. I'm sure that if I wanted to talk to him, I could get to talk to him. But see, I don't go running downtown talking. That's Mr. Shaw's job.
Yes. No. But sometimes one might have a chat on the telephone.
On certain things, one could do something. I think I know where he's at on that one. I've met with him and in the group, you know, other people. And it just happened that the speaker wasn't organized for him. It thought that belonged to him. You haven't got all your questions yet.
No. Well, you keep looking at your watch.
You got another one you'd like to do before you break up?
What about your appointment as president? Could you talk about the circumstances of that?
I was swimming in Arizona, and I got a phone call from Bert McNamara saying, we want you to be president.
And that's all you knew about it?
Yeah, because I'd gone out there assuming that Pelderson from Illinois had the job when I left. Now, why did that happen? And I intend to ask Bert sometime, but I have never got around to it.
Is he around?
He's in Milwaukee.
Oh, well, you should interview him.
He's a person you ought to interview. You might get some very interesting commentary out of Bert.
My name was on the list of people being interviewed, and then I withdrew for two or three different reasons. One, the chances of getting it wasn't terribly great. Second, I'd only have two or three years to serve under the 62-year rule.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some mixed feelings about the system job. I'd watched it quite closely. And so the combination of things, but when the Regents asked me, when Bert asked me to do it, they accepted all my conditions. If you make a lot of conditions and people accept them, what can you do?
Yeah, one of them was, I know, to keep Don Smith. And I'm curious, was his appointment, did that make a difference to you when he was appointed in 1973?
I don't know if he knows.
I'm sitting here, but yeah.
I don't know if he really knows it. a whole story on that one. Maybe I've told it.
Probably
no,
not.
No, but tell it.
Well, when I told you how the chancellor from Eau Claire had been brought down to equalize Percy, which was about like asking, you know, like this. Took the first chance he had to go home. Then there was an opening, there was a search and screen committee. And on that search and screen committee was Irv Shane. Irv came to me and said, are you with any suggestions? I said, I've got one, but don't let anybody ever know that it came from me. That might make some problem. I didn't know Donald Smith, but he was working for me in Indonesia. We had a project over there, and he had elected for his own personal reasons to leave Minnesota with his wife. And they went over there, and the reports I got back were glowing about him. And then I started talking to friends in Minnesota about him. And I also knew that he was Mr. Weaver's father's student, and Mr. Weaver would be sympathetically inclined. You might even think that he had somebody here who would be just fit right into the family. So that's how that was my role. Have I said anything that you think is wrong?
No, I don't think so. It was kind of a mind-boggling recruitment. I really was intending to, when I left, I was on leave from Minnesota, and I intended to back.
You told this story, I think,
in your
other interview. So.
And then I came back, and I had to face this committee. That had to be the most outlandish search committee in the history of higher education. The whole room was full. There was something like 30 people on it, and it was all seemingly sort of pro forma. Everything went very quickly, and then I had a meeting with the regents, and so everything went along fine, and it looked sort of interesting. As Ed says, when you take a presidency, you don't really find out much about the job till you get there. And about the only thing I was interested in was that I had my degree from Madison. I liked Madison. Here was a brand new job, totally new institution. Nothing had been put on paper yet particularly. And I thought, I'm not going to be an administrator much longer. I really was planning to go back to the department. So I said that would be fun to try. And it was fun. Yeah, but it was... I only intended to stay for 5 years. I told John I would stay until he left, or for 5 years if he stayed here longer than 5 years. And then I got sort of intercepted by the antics in the presidential search. I do want to say that I'm proud of that search, except for Ed's withdrawal. He withdrew from the race, and I assumed that was ended it. That was
I assumed too. Mm-hmm. And you know, I might not have gotten it. You know, there was some reason who had other ideas, but nobody was really against me. And
they just
had their own candidates.
Mm-hmm. They had their own candidates. We had a very, very distinguished group of finalists. I don't think they'll ever have another group of finalists of that quality in the search for president of the system, because systems, the word has got out about systems.
Yeah, they're not very important.
And they were not considered such an unattractive job at the time. We had Peltison, who went to ACE. He was at Illinois. We had Cliff Wharton, who was at Michigan State and went to SUNY. We had
Heyman,
who was vice chancellor at Berkeley and became chancellor at Berkeley. We had the man from Utah who became
Gardner,
who became president of the California system thereafter. And then we had a Big Ten president whom I shall remain nameless, and the They were all, there was an exceptional group of people, and all of them were interested. I don't know how many of them could have been recruited in the final analysis, but all of them were interested. Mm-hmm. And the board did not behave as I thought boards did. They always did. They were divided between two people. Normally, after that has been argued out in the full board and the House has been divided and the majority of the board wants to go in one way, then there's a motion for unanimous vote so that the board comes together and they make the new person feel welcome. The group that was slightly behind was not about to permit that to happen, and it made it almost intolerable system, their situation. I didn't have anything to do. What happened there after was Bert McNamara's doing along with the regents, because they were in a situation where they could not resolve the thing. They voted and voted and voted, made speeches for about 3 hours. I made speeches. Then they adjourned, and then I don't know whether it was the next morning. I know, I guess it was later that afternoon. Bert came and said, we have caucus, and we've arrived at a decision if we can get him. And I wasn't disagreeable to the person that they named at that time. So he went out on the phone, called up Ed Young, and Ed made that absurd stipulation, which put me in the spot, because the one thing I didn't want to do was continue with the presidential search by saying no. Mm.
You know, you keep looking at your watch, so I imagine.
Go ahead.
Well, I would like you to talk about O'Neill's presidency, but you started off on the who was to represent Wisconsin at the, is it the AUP?
AAU.
And you, when you became president, turned it over to Irv Shane, is that right?
Well, I didn't, but I tried to get the regents to. That was my problem. They had made it, they'd got, I asked them to change the rule. I continued to go, and I think I took Irv with me, or tried to take him, but the system guys had gotten together and caucused, you see, against this kind of thing. So it was very complicated. I was trying to get them to change, and I finally did stop going and sent Irv in my place or something like that. But then O'Neill, of course, wanted to be in this club. This is the club. See, it's a prestigious thing. And the same way, reason that John wanted to be there, and you know, anybody would want to be there, but it really belonged to Madison. And I resented that John was representing Madison when he should be taking care of the system. I didn't care about his going to the Big Ten athletic things. That meant nothing to me. But that's all the Big Ten ever did. They never got around to talk about anything else except athletics, terrible waste of time, really. But that was one of those things. But actually, there's very little about O'Neill's presidency that I could tell you.
Well, just on this AAU, that created very hard feelings.
Well, I'm not surprised.
O'Neill worked, and Shane.
But not with me. It really belongs to Madison.
Did you talk to O'Neill about it when, I know you met him in January, didn't you?
Yes. I don't think I talked to him about that. I talked to him about the problems of systems, and he understood them perfectly, that he'd been very much held down by the president of Indiana, and he respected the autonomy of campuses and wouldn't interfere and all that.
Mm-hmm. And did he?
Oh, not with me.
Well, but then you weren't,
You weren't there.
You weren't there, yes. Did he with Madison?
Well, that would be a question you'd have to ask Irv Shane.
Still, you would have a view on it.
Irv would.
Yes, he would too.
Yes, I think he would. I think that O'Neill had the same problem to some extent John did, and that is, he really wanted to be president of Madison. too. He wouldn't say it that way, but he insisted on being a professor and teaching in the law school, even though it was very, he had to have somebody else prepared to sit in for him, because, you know, the duty don't let you do that. On social events, he was very, very, wrote a very nasty letter once to Irv about that. When they started seeming to have a difference, I thought it was Irv's fault. I knew Irv pretty well, and he'd be friends. But I later came to the conclusion that it was just as much O'Neill's fault.
I was, see, O'Neill did ask me about AEU, and I told him what had happened, and that there had been a change of a new letter written, and Irv had been going. And I, knowing the history of it, I said that I thought this was a wise arrangement, although I thought he should take some time to look at it, and then if really push very hard to see if he couldn't get for Wisconsin the same privilege that California has of having at least two people come. But certainly Madison was the doctoral institution that was the original member of AAU and was the reason for AAU having somebody from Madison. He did not follow my advice on that. And I've sometimes said, it may be a little exaggeration, but he never asked for my advice on anything again. He was always going to, but he didn't. I don't know what happened, but it was not an auspicious beginning. My belief is, as I recall hearing about it, rather than even sitting down and discussing the matter, he simply wrote a letter to Irv and told him that he was assuming this particular role. And Irv took that very, very badly. He felt, I know he was quite explosively angered by it, because it seemed so formal. I think it was perhaps done out of timidity, but not a lack of sense of how to go about talking things through. It was O'Neill's decision to make, and the board's to make, obviously. I didn't have anything to do with it. I just thought it was a very bad way of starting. But should have been given a little time to settle down.
Mm-hmm. O'Neill apparently got advice on these things from two sources. Jack Ryan, who was a great centralizer, and Fred mm-hmm. Harrington was a great centralizer.
Mm-hmm.
They both advised him to take charge. Mm-hmm. You run this place. That's what I'm told. I don't know if you saw or not.
Well, he did. He did go back to, for 6 months, he was back in Indiana every week. And there was considerable evidence that during those times he would confer about what he sensed to be his issues and problems here with Jack Ryan. Seemed to me not to be a very wise source.
Who was Jack Ryan?
President of Indiana.
Yeah.
Oh.
He was here in extension when he was a young man. And then he went to Massachusetts and got to be the head of this campus in Boston, the University of Massachusetts, and then went to Indiana. It's been a long time. But he changed the titles of chancellors to vice presidents, so everybody understand that they worked for him. They didn't work.
Oh, yes.
And he once upbraided me for having Irv go to the Big Ten instead of assisting with the president, because I go when I was president. But see, he and I see things completely different. He believes that you know, the power should be in his hands. I didn't want to be without influence, but I guess I didn't need the trappings quite as badly as some people. You know, it's like I like to win by about 51%. That's about all I care for, that 1%. So it isn't my morality isn't any better than these people who are criticizing. don't miss it.
lead me to think.
No,
you
think no,
I think so.
That's true.
It's just different. It's a, I guess, I suppose it's a kind of, a different kind of conceit. Probably.
In other words, you're admitting not, that you're not modest.
No, I'm not modest. And, but the other thing is, I was interested in getting the results, you see, often. I was interested in having the right vice president up there for Madison. And I wasn't interested in going around appearing to be a kingmaker. I would have lost. I might have lost if that got that way anyhow. Well, different people do things differently. And that's one of the good things about changing administrations every once in a while. Because you shouldn't fall into a pattern of repeating the same thing over and over. University too. I'm not as dismayed as some of my faculty colleagues appear to be at the thought of losing our chancellor. We'll get somebody else, or if we've got a good chance, then we'll get another good one. I hope he'd be different, as if Arab and I are so different. You know, people talk about the dangers to the university. Killing a university is a very difficult job. They're like worse than killing octopuses.
You really think so, do you?
You can damage.
Damage, well, yeah.
Over a long period, but no one person coming or going is going to make all the difference.
Yeah, it's a very terrible.
It's like when I remember one day when I was chancellor, the freshman president of the WSA appeared in my office and said, "You come with an ultimatum. They were going to close the university down, whatever the occasion was, or else I was through." And I said to him, I said, "I'll tell you something. You can't close the university down, nor neither can I. It's not going to close down." He broke out crying because he promised his crowd to go up there and threaten me with being fired if I didn't have me out of there. And he started weeping.
Delivering an ultimatum, and you
delivered an ultimatum, and I told him it couldn't work. Yeah. No way we could do it.
Yeah. Even working together, we can't make it happen.
Well,
actually, the light's flashing,
yeah, well,
so we're going to have to stop anyway.
I think that's probably one day per day.